So just as we did then, throughout the retreat, at any time you can simply come to the basic method of mindfulness of breathing, bringing attention to the breath as you breathe in and as you breathe out. It's actually an extraordinary instruction. When the Buddha would go off into the forest to be alone for some time and then come back to the Sangha, they would say, "What were you doing?" And he would say, "Mindfulness of breathing." So mindfulness of breathing is a meditation that helps us calm the body and the mind. I've received a number of questions about how do I know which meditation instruction to choose. What I suggest is if you're feeling very agitated, do the very simple mindfulness of the breath. Really developing your focus, making a quiet determination to feel every single breath as it comes in and as it comes out. So we get a sense of the stillness in which the movement of the breath sits, and we can be rather steady with our experience. The way we pay attention is also critical. We need to pay attention with non-grasping mind. So it's alert, awake. The Buddha asked us to be, in the instructions, to be ardent, so to be enthusiastic. So the attention has a bit of energy with it. It's not, "Oh no, here I go again. Another sitting, how am I going to sit here for 45 minutes? It's not that. It's actually really meeting life in a vital way. Now, with the other instructions, there are, of course, the instructions on body, the instructions so far we've had on mindfulness of feeling, which included the cultivation of joy and happiness. And yesterday we came to mindfulness of the mind states, and we're halfway through. At any time, you can choose one of these instructions to work with in a sitting. I suggest you just choose one, make a clear decision and do it. Not 2 minutes of, "Oh, I think I'll do joy. Oh no, there's no joy. I think I'll skip back to mindfulness of breathing." And then you go, "Oh, no, I really like that other one." And so then we just go all over the place and there's no focus whatsoever. So just a clear decision. Today I'm going to work with joy. Today I'm going to work with contentment, for example, or in this session I'm going to work. You could spend the entire day working with just one of the instructions. And in fact, these instructions in this sutta would normally be done in a rains retreat, which is a 3-month retreat during the monsoon, so that it's not a rush. It's not 4 different instructions every day. But the reason I'm doing it like this is just to give you a little taste of what's on offer. And then you can work with the instructions. There's a lifetime of practice in this sutta, really there is. So clear decisions, what I will do in the sitting. And then you set the intention by saying the couplet just in your mind. For example, if you chose contentment, breathing in, experiencing contentment, breathing out, experiencing contentment. You set the intention and then you simply do it. Yes?
I had the feeling that I should do all the instructions in one sitting.
Yes, yes.
And I so far, a couple of reps, which is a piece of that, okay, because I feel it's working for me.
Okay. If it's working for you, then fine. But it's normally, it is true that one instruction opens out the next and then the next and then the next, and then it becomes very refined, more and more refined as one goes. If you are able to do that and you have very good focus, then it's fine with me. Yes. Yes. Often our attention in everyday life is quite scattered. We're busy, we're caught up in doing, and so we simply need to come back to mindfulness of breathing. As our practice develops, we can take up some of the other instructions. So I'd suggest that. What I often do myself is mindfulness of breathing, and then I take my attention to the pleasantness of the breath. So really the gladdening of the heart mind comes rather easily. So that would be my kind of go-to in my own life. Walking meditation is also a great suggestion in terms of everyday life practice. I'd like to go on now. Oh, there was another question I'd like to address, and it's how to work with pain. I know that some of you are quite uncomfortable as you sit. Even the Buddha had back pain. Okay. It's a natural thing. If we sit long enough, we will feel some pain or some unpleasant sensation. However, sitting a meditation retreat isn't an endurance test of who can be with pain the longest without moving. Meditation is about insight and wisdom. It's not about being a statue. Stillness of the body is really beneficial to the sitting practice. If, however, you have an injury or you have a particular a pain in a part of the body and it becomes unbearable to sit, or you think that the posture is actually doing you harm, so if you have, for example, an injured knee or an injured hip, then it's wisdom to change the posture. That doesn't mean impulsively changing your position every 3 seconds in response to agitation of the mind. So what we do is we feel the unpleasant sensation in a part of the body. We rather steady with it. We don't have to move immediately. Then we can explore, oh, what is pain? Pain is an overarching term that refers to sensations that come and go and come and go. And then we can take the attention inside the body as if we use the power of the mind to massage that particular area. And sometimes when we do this, the pain will actually dissipate. Another method is to find the very center of the pain with arrow-like attention. So first of all, rather than just automatically move, we work rather steadily with pain. So we bring steady equanimity to the unpleasant sensation of the pain. And then sometimes the pain is simply felt as pain, not necessarily unpleasant. There's just the discomfort. And I know that people who have chronic illness spend a lot of time really being mindful, giving mindful attention to the pain. And if we can be with the sensation without resistance, without adding a layer of mental anguish, then the pain can subside or the pain can be certainly reduced. If you notice that when the bell goes, all of your pains stop, it means there was a psychological element to the pain. It wasn't physical at all. There was mental anguish, impatience, the thought, I can't sit here, the thought, I can't do this. It adds to the pain. It forms the kind of resistance. So just notice, when the bell goes, what happens to your pain? Does it suddenly vanish? Many people report this. I was in agony until the bell went. Okay, enough on pain. Tomorrow night, there will be some time with all three teachers in the Dharma Talk part of the program for you to ask questions. We're going to ask you to write the questions tomorrow. And then all three of us will respond. You'll have plenty of time for questions. And if you've already written a note and not received a response, be patient. There'll be a response tomorrow night. So now I want to come to the final two instructions in mindfulness of citta, mindfulness of the mental formation. The first two instructions, just to remind you. Yeah. If you don't understand something I've said, a word, raise your hand and we'll try to get translation. Okay. So coming back to the instructions, mindfulness of mental formations, mindfulness of the citta. Yesterday we looked at experiencing the heart-mind and then gladdening the heart-mind. The next in this section is I shall breathe in concentrating the heart-mind. I shall breathe out concentrating the heart-mind. Now, before we do it, I want to say a little bit about this. The Pali word that's usually translated as concentration is samadhi, and it actually means the mind that is unified, the mind that's collected, the mind that's composed. Sometimes focus and concentration is seen as one-pointed attention. So focusing on one thing to the exclusion of all else. In fact, that's probably what we think of in English if I were to say concentration. But in the Dharma world, there's another way that this word is used, and I think it's quite beneficial with this particular instruction, to have a broader, if you like, a kind of wider, more expansive focus. So the focus need not be on a single thing, such as the touch of the breath somewhere on the lip. The focus can be more broad and wide, like a wide lake instead. And so this is the kind of focus I'm going to suggest that you try when we begin to the actual practice in the 3-minute session. It's rather like choiceless awareness, where we open our consciousness in an expansive way. And within that, we include everything. So we're not just focusing on one thing. However, as we do that, it might be that we hear a sound. It might be that there's a sense of our own heart beating. It might be that we have a thought. All of this can be included in a broad, expansive, open, receptive way. You'll notice one contact through the sense doors. You might notice coolness. You might notice warmth. So it's a broad, open sense of concentration. I hope you understand. Just give it a try. Let's see. So it's breathing in, concentrating the heart-mind, the citta. Breathing out, concentrating the heart-mind. I know that was very brief, but did anyone have an experience of unification or expansiveness? What did you discover? Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So you were resting in observing all that's occurring. Great. Anyone else? Yes. No. Yes. Yes. So it is when we bring broad attention to it, we are seeing what's there. The heart mind is how we meet the world. Okay? But yes, the instructions about focus. It's about developing our capacity to concentrate, to unify the mind. Yes.
And I felt it very useful, also in regulating my body.
Yes.
I felt like a wave coming from my head to my heart, like this.
Yes.
And it was, and then I felt that it helped me quite the mind because I also met the body and the feeling.
Okay.
So it was very quiet, combining the two of them together.
Okay. So sometimes we have that beautiful, quietness that's experienced as, in this case, a circular kind of flow,
yes,
from head to heart and round again, as if the two are not separate. Head and heart are non-dual. It's chitta, when understood, is not divided, it's not two. It's just the knowing of being with this life. How we meet life. And we just meet life. We meet life not only with our thoughts and ideas, but we meet life with our heart, with care, with our emotional world, with the body as well, as you said. It's all there. Yes. Ah, when we rest in awareness, awareness has the capacity to reveal, and awareness can reveal many things. It reveals whatever is present. So it's not necessarily, it won't necessarily reveal concentration if concentration isn't present. But when we really rest into awareness, awareness reveals all that's happening in the body, all that's happening in the feeling world, what's happening in the mind, and it also reveals the Dharma. We come to that tomorrow. It reveals everything that's occurring, actually. Awareness isn't ultimate. Awareness reveals our freedom. Or awareness reveals where we're stuck. When we really touch into a depth of samadhi, it can certainly feel like extraordinary awareness, but it's the unification of the heart mind. It comes with extraordinary depth of stillness and peace, the felt sense of the concentration is stillness and peace. And there can be wonderful deep levels of concentration that one can touch into in the meditation practice. They are not in and of themselves liberation, but they are deep, refined, rather exquisite, and beautiful states of stillness, of peace, where All sense of perhaps body ceases, all sense of mind can cease, and so on. These are temporary experiences. We go into them and out of them. What is most important is that we understand what the experience is telling us. We understand the peace. We understand that since we can experience peace, what does that mean for us? What does it mean for life? So we bring wisdom also to our painful experiences. So awareness is the capacity of the mind to reveal. And it reveals the sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thought. It also reveals the liberation. Yes? Yes.
Where I clean some room. And I really don't know where it was or anything. And most of the time, I imagine myself doing something. After I try to imagine my body and the cheetah or something. And then I drift into an imaginary world where I do something. And I don't know if it's connected to
mind has the capacity to imagine and to dream. And so we can imagine that we're doing something that's somewhere else. So it's just a mechanism of mind that we all have, and don't pay too much attention to it. Just be aware, oh, there I go thinking again. There I go imagining again, and come back to the breath. Don't give it too much significance. Yeah. It's just the mind and its capacity to dream, to imagine, to fabricate, to put together notions and ideas. Yes. Yes. You don't need to say them. You just say them first. And then you do it. Don't keep repeating the instruction. Yeah? Yes. 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 The reason I suggested doing it in a wide way is it's generally much easier for people. That's all. Both ways are fine. Both ways are samadhi. Yes. Yeah. Yes. 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 That intention can sometimes just take the trying out of things and the expansiveness and openness just naturally comes. Okay. One more at the back. Loudly. Yes. Yes. So it happens here with the teacher, but not when you try to do it yourself. You have to be your own teacher. Or you can listen to me over and over again. Some people say they hear my voice saying the instruction and then they do it. You're not the only one who said this. And it also helps the group and everyone doing it together really does kind of help. It's extraordinary, really, how sitting together with the Sangha really helps deepen the experience and opens out consciousness. Yes. Yeah.
Out of the meditation, just sitting there.
Yes.
Now I was thinking about this skipping and trying to get it again.
Yes.
And clinging to it.
Yes. So we have a nice sitting on the retreat if we're blessed. We have a calm, concentrated sitting. What do? We want it back again. And so next time we try, instead of being present, we're stuck in remembering the previous experience, just as you said. So the key is to let go of remembering and just come back to the actuality of the direct experience here and now. Okay, let's go on to another instruction now. And this is my all-time favorite meditation instruction. I know one is not meant to have preferences, but I do. Okay? And this is mine. It is simply breathing in, liberating the heart mind, or freeing the heart mind, breathing out, liberating the heart mind. So what we're doing with this instruction is it's as if we start from freedom itself. We just start by being as free as we possibly can right here and now. So rather than sit striving to get something that's just out of reach, what we're doing is we're just sitting in our knowing of freedom. Each of us here has had lots of moments where the heart mind is already free. We know it. They're little moments during the day. We have them over and over again. We do not cling all the time. We do not suffer all the time. So the instruction is breathing in, liberating the heart mind, breathing out, liberating heart mind. Did anybody have even a moment of freedom? Yes.
There was this is the only meditation I think that I do from anything, nothing.
Freedom from pain here at the front. Okay, beautiful. There's your instruction to work with. Yes.
I said immediately happiness.
Ah, yes.
And concentration.
Ah, happiness and concentration came.
Open.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I felt like a child, like I'm not here, and I'm in like a place, like somewhere.
Yes.
It's like I didn't feel anything. Like I felt very released.
Yeah. A release, as if you were a channel, like a vase. Okay. Beautiful. Yes, at the back. Yes. 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 Oh. Fantastic. Freedom is fun. It's fun. There can be fun. It's not all serious meditation practice. There's enormous delights that can come. Beautiful. Yes. 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 Ah. Yes. Yes. So heart and mind played together here. Yes. Ah. Yes, me too. Yes. Okay, so effortlessly with the divine, there are beautiful divine qualities of the heart. These are love, compassion, joy, and equanimity, as you probably know. There are beautiful divine divinities of the heart. And sometimes we can just feel them. We just know them. And there's that precious release. Sometimes it's described, as you did, as a sense of oneness. We can go even beyond oneness. In the teachings, the Buddha says neither one nor many. And one has an edge, you see. So if we're really talking about boundlessness, we're not stuck in some idea of oneness either. But I really appreciate what you said about that, feeling the immediacy of the divinity of the heart. Beautiful. Yes.
Options become to stop to be the freedom, it starts to be the work.
Yes, okay.
I'm working in the meditation and not like to be the flow.
Okay, so what would you need to do then if you realize that you.
I think to come back to the breath.
Yes. to come back to the breath and steady the mind. It amazes me how much happens in 3 minutes sometimes when people describe what's going on. Okay, yes.
I felt a kind of freedom.
Yes.
That I've only felt the best when I wasn't in my body, except that I was in my body.
Yes.
And I found myself putting my head and on my heart, because yeah, they're always at odds.
Yes.
And they weren't. And then I remembered that the second mind is in the stomach, and I have digestive issues.
Okay. Okay.
So
nothing was at odds, neither head nor heart nor stomach.
And the freedom was just in a body, which is,
yes,
I always fight.
Yes.
And it was in the body.
Freedom can be found in the body. Amazing. They're right here, just like that. Yes?
I think that was too fast trained.
Yes.
I was putting too much effort.
Yes, yes.
Stressed.
Yes.
Or not accomplishing
anything. Yes, so the I wants to accomplish something. Too much effort, then what? Okay, so when we notice that we're striving too hard, we just ease back a little bit with the wanting, with the pushing. Because wanting a particular experience, even wanting the freedom, is a desire. So if we're sitting with this urge, I want to know freedom, this too is a desire, and we cling to even that desire.
Probably the desire that makes me the most.
Yes. It's also the desire that's the last to cease. So we need to look and go, okay, what am I actually wanting? Can I let go of the wanting? This is our task. To let go of all wanting. So we see wanting mind grips, grasps, pushes, demands, wants to have, wants to be somebody, wants to be free, wants to be enlightened, wants to be awake. So we have to see that too and go, uh-huh, I see what's happening here. And then we just come back to loosening the grip of the mind. We stop striving. So the instruction is to free the mind, to liberate the mind. And sometimes we have to look at the beliefs that are associated with that, because sometimes we hold really deep-seated beliefs. I cannot be free. I am not free. Freedom's for other people, not for me. So we have to look at those beliefs too, the things that prevent us from directly knowing freedom for ourselves. Yes.
I felt that I'm free from responsibility even for my body.
Yes.
And then it was a very nice feeling. But then I realized that maybe things will collapse, like I'm with you now, because I'm not holding it.
Okay. So a freedom that if I, a fear, sorry, that if I let go into freedom, I'll start doing strange things and inappropriate things. It doesn't happen like that. When we think about freedom, if we think about freedom from within the self view, we're already limited and stuck. a question that often comes, and there's been several of them this retreat, is if I let go into contentment or freedom or peace, how will I be motivated to do anything? Won't I just, you know, the idea is that we become some kind of vegetable, or we just won't be an ordinary human being who can achieve anything or do anything or be motivated to do anything. This question itself, this thought, this idea is coming from the self and from within the self. It assumes the self. We can't know freedom from the mind that's limited. We can't see and know our freedom from within that constriction. We need the expansiveness. From the expansiveness, or with the expansiveness, we can know and touch into this natural freedom of heart. And then we don't have to fear what hasn't happened yet. What may happen. One more at the back. Yes. Yes. Okay. So at first there was stiffness and hardness and a lack of sense of freedom with the body. And then you felt the heart and energy spreading all through the body, and the release. This tells you that you can move from restriction, from pain, to a sense of release. And we can do it with attention. It's the attention and the focus and the concentration, the awareness that's bringing the fruit of the freedom, the fruit of the liberation. And just on that note, I'm sad to tell you that it's not liberation from discomfort. Sometimes, as we've heard a couple of times today, we can really just shift from any kind of discomfort in the body using the power of the mind, the power of our capacity to be free. There are many times, however, when there are issues with the body, for example, in illness, where we will still feel unpleasant sensations. We will still feel discomfort. But what is important in that is that we can still know joy and peace and contentment, the sense of freedom that is not dependent upon the condition of the body. So we can know a happiness, we can know a peace, we can know a freedom, which isn't bound to illness. The Buddha went in search of that which was not bound to birth, aging, pain and death. And this is what we're looking for. This is what we can directly know when we just sit with freedom of heart. So thank you, each of you, for the exploration today, for all of the wonderful things that you've said, and feel free to take up this instruction if you would like to at another time during the day. Or, of course, you can just come back anytime to a sitting with mindfulness of breathing. And please don't repeat the instruction over and over in your mind. Set an intention and then simply do it. Thank you.